This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to Scran, the podcast passionate about the Scottish food and drink scene. This week we're in beautiful Lanarkshire, in the heart of Scotland, an area with a long tradition of food production. The Clyde Valley famously produced rich pickings across the dairy and vegetable food chains. I went along to visit some of the businesses who now make up Lanarkshire Larder, a regional food group that includes food and drink producers, restaurants, cafes, pubs, hotels and farm shops, all of whom share a passion about the provenance and quality of products they sell. First up, everyone's favourite, cheese. I met Selena Cairns, who runs Errington Cheese. The business was started by her dad back in the early 80s and continues to produce sheep and goat's cheese, one of the only businesses in Scotland to do so.
Scotland Food and Drink were sort of promoting regional food groups, and there was nothing in Lanarkshire at all. And we probably got more food producers here than any other region in Scotland.
My next stop was Thackerton Farm, where I met Michael Shannon, who rears and produces all the meat for his butchers and supply shop, Damn Delicious.
I never really thought of Lanarkshire for the beautiful county that it is. It's absolutely stunning. Like, I took my staff out this morning at 8 o'clock out of the front door of our shop and made them stand and look around and just enjoy the beautiful area we live in. It's a stunning setting.
From the countryside, I headed to Strathaven to sit down with Theo Giamos, owner of Roasted, the kind of cafe that every town should have. His business ethos is very much focused on sustainability, locally sourced products, socially conscious and environmentally friendly practices. He told me about a lot of challenges being faced by the business and customers alike.
So a customer had recommended or suggested we do this, so we started it, but what actually happened? There is areas of deprivation in Strathaven and people that are in need, because we've got a food bank now. And although you've got 500,000, 600,000 pound houses and everybody's got two cars, they don't talk about poverty in Strathaven, but it is present. But people have this thing about going into a place like this. So what I end up doing, I collect them. Once I get up to a certain figure, I then give it to various charities.
Less than a 10-minute drive away, my next meeting was with Robert of St Bride's Poultry. He took me to meet some of the lassies and the odd laddie being fattened up for Christmas.
These guys are now 2 months old, and by the time it comes to December, that'll be them 6 months old, as opposed to some supermarket breeds which would maybe just live for 2 months.
Finally, you'll hear me chatting to Andrew and Linda of Greenhog Country Cafe and Farm Shop. They've been growing and expanding a business, the original idea for which was born at a dinner party where they served crocodile, ostrich and wagyu beef.
And Linda was always glad that we didn't like crocodile, because she didn't fancy keeping crocodiles here. So.
I met up with Selena Cairns of Errington Cheese at her farm in Wolston Bray Head. We visited the pigs, sheep and goats before sitting down to chat all things cheese.
We've got a farm in South Lanarkshire near Biggar, and we have about 150 goats, dairy goats, and 350 dairy sheep, and we process all the milk into cheese here on the farm. Blue cheese called Lanark Blue is what we started with back in the early 80s. We started milking goats a couple of years ago, so we also make a Biggar Blue, which is a blue goat's cheese. And then Coraline is a hard sheep's cheese, and we make a selection of fresh goat's cheeses, Elric Log and Black Mounts. And so they get sold to farm shops and delicatessens and to wholesalers who distribute it to restaurants and hotels sort of down the country. We just had a traditional farm, and I think my father just felt that he didn't want to be reliant on subsidies and things. So there was a tradition of milking sheep, you know, if you went way back in the area. So that's how it all started. And yeah, I think he just liked blue cheese. And so that's why, you know, when it all came about. I suppose we're very small in the scheme of things compared with the big dairies producing cow's milk, just because the sheep and goats obviously don't produce as much milk. And we can't obviously buy any in because there isn't any.
I asked Selena if there were similar businesses in the country and to tell me more about how they make their cheese.
No, not in Scotland, I don't think. But down south, there's lots of people milking sheep and goats. And obviously, even more if you go over to France. So we mature it. The sheep are sort of seasonal in their milk production. So we make it from sort of February to August and September. So they're just drying off the sheep just now. And it does vary a bit. So by Christmas time in January for Burns Night, it gets a bit stronger and more spicy, whereas it's quite kind of sweet and mild in the spring. The bigger blue we make, the goat's one, we don't make so much of that, but it's all year round. And the Coraline, the other sheep cheese we make, is made like a cheddar in a very traditional way. And it's matured in muslin cheesecloth and matured for about a year, which you can see as you come into the building at the front there. And we sell a lot of that in very specialist kind of restaurants and, you know, cheese counters.
Lanarkshire Larder was the brainchild of Selena. I asked her to tell us how it all come about.
Well, I suppose it's a year and a half ago now. The Scotland Food and Drink was sort of promoting regional food groups, and there was nothing in Lanarkshire at all. And we've probably got more food producers here than any other region in Scotland, and I just felt a bit frustrated, I suppose, that nobody was, you know, there was no central body, you know, trying to promote it and get funding to do that. And so we started off, and we've got funding from Scotland Food and Drink and South Lanarkshire Council and North Lanarkshire Council, so we've now got 62 members, so really short space of time, which is really good. So we're just kind of still in the early stages. We've had various events, and we've created a food trail and food maps, and we've sort of been attending local shows like Bigger Show and the Balloon Festival in Strathaven. And it's really just to bring all the producers together so we can work together and, you know, even just find out about what's being produced in the area for the farm shops and the hotels, because sometimes you just don't know, do you? If nobody's there sort of bringing it all together, you know, all working together for the greater good. So the more people know about Lanarkshire as a whole and the produce that we're producing here, like, it should benefit us all, because people see it as, you know, an area that's producing high quality produce. You can join if you go onto our website, lanarkshirelarder.com. There's a link there for joining, and we've got two part-time regional coordinators, Gillian and Alison, so they can help you and answer any questions that you have.
Selena wasn't too forthcoming about the awards her cheeses have won, which include the title of Best Scottish Cheese at the 2019 World Cheese Award for their Lanark Blue and Coraline. I asked her about this and to tell me more about the food trail set up as part of Lanarkshire Larder.
Yeah, we've been very lucky that we've won some awards over the years for various different things. I think they've all won things from time to time. So it's nice. It kind of boosts staff morale and, you know, people give you something to talk about, doesn't it? Which is nice. So it's a trail that you can, well, I suppose you could follow the whole thing or you could follow part of it. And there's a map on Lanarkshire Larder's website. So if you wanted to visit Bigger, we've got the Shield Hill Hotel and the Crown and the Elphinstone Hotel. I think, I hope I'm not missing anybody out in Bigger. And then there's ice cream producers, Tailors of Bigger. And then you can obviously go, and there's fresh fruit and veg from Shirley's. And there's gin from the Wee Farm Distillery, which is just up the road. So it just gives you an idea of different foodie kind of things you can do in the area. And obviously go and eat in some of the hospitality venues. And then if you went down to the Clyde Valley, There's farm shops and garden centres that, you know, also have lots of food. And then there's New Lanarkshire. There's lots of different pieces along the trail that you can go and visit with your family, or, well, maybe not the gin ones so much, but we have got lots of gin producers in Lanarkshire. So, you know, if you, that's what you like, you could do a wee trail, go around and see them all.
Finally, I asked Selena where people could find out more about the business and what's on the cards for the future of both Errington Cheese and Lanarkshire Larder.
You can buy our produce online, and probably most other people's as well. There's a page for every producer and hospitality business on Lanarkshire Larder's website, and also a link through to the producer's website. So it's a good central place to go to find out what's happening. It's a bit of a tough time for business generally, a bit uncertain. So yeah, we're just going to keep working on the produce we've got just now. And then we're hoping to have a sort of pop-up farm shop over Christmas. I mean, you can obviously come here and buy it directly from us just now, the cheese, but have us something a wee bit more shop-like. But hopefully we manage to attract some more members, and, you know, we just start doing a few more events and just build it up.
We travelled south and turned into what looked like a large supply store on the main road, about halfway between Lanark and Biggar. We found a butcher shop stocking everything you might need for your dinner and beyond. Here's Michael Shannon, owner of Thackerton Farm and its farm shop, Damn Delicious. We're at the farm shop at Damn Delicious in Lanarkshire, and I'm joined by owner Michael. So we're going to talk a little bit about the produce available here and how you came to run the farm and what people can expect. So hi, Michael.
Hello.
So can you tell us a little bit about all the produce you've got here?
Okay, so we're very passionate about all the meat that we produce. We're farmers as well, and all our beef and all our lamb is 100% grass-fed. So we're quite unique in the way we farm, in that we don't feed any grain or any barley or any meal to any of our animals. They're outside all year round. So in the summertime, they're eating grass and clover. And then in the wintertime, they eat kale or swedes, turnips, and a little bit of silage just for roughage in the diet. What this does is, in my opinion, makes the meat particularly flavoursome. It's very high in omega-3s, very healthy. So there's great benefits to it, both for the animal's health, because they're not housed where they get all these horrible things, ailments, chest infections, etc., and all the rest. They don't get any of that. They're outside all year round. But also then, for the people that actually use the products, it's a very healthy product.
We're standing in front of a fridge, so can you just sort of talk us through what it is we're looking at for people to get like a sort of idea?
So we do everything from raw to cooked. We process all our own meat here. All the animals go to a local abattoir. We're very short and are trying to keep our food miles as short as we can. So they go to a local abattoir, it's the closest abattoir to here. They're moved across there, then we bring them back here. We have all our own butchers on site, and they process all the meat. So we make all our own burgers, our sausages, anything else, any other meats that we can't produce here, we buy in from as local as we can do. So for example, our bacon comes from a very old established bacon curer in Ardrossan. We do things like Stornoway black pudding, Charles McLeod Stornoway black pudding. But then all the sausages and the burgers and all these other products, they're all made here on site. And we also then on site, we have our own bakery where we make all our own pies, and we use what we can find as the best ingredients, and we try and make it the most sort of tasty product that we can.
And it's all traditional pies, so like steak pie, and then you've got scotch pies, macaroni pies.
So the steak pies, etc., and all the rest, we cook them. So we cook the stew overnight. It's all really slowly cooked, so it just falls apart when you eat it. We then have quite a bit of meat. It's a bit of a challenge. Having as much meat as we can fit in the pie, but still having a little bit of room for the gravy so that it's not dry. So we do steak pies, we do mince pies, we do curry pies. We've started doing a few different things like chicken and ham with a cheesy sauce. They're really, really good. And then what we're finding a big growth in the shop is things like ready meals. So we do parcels, do fillet balmorals and chicken balmorals. And these sort of products are really a sort of a growth area, the area where people come along, just grab and go. Although where we are and the type of product we are producing, you were trying to produce a really high quality product. We find a lot more foodies come to us. So people are really into their food, want really good meat, they're maybe eating less meat now. There's definitely a move to eat less meat, so they're choosing to if they are going to eat meat, eat the best meat that they can possibly afford.
You've also got some fruit and veg here, so is that, can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
So the fruit and veg, actually, well, we started that when we moved into the new premises. We started doing fruit and veg. We found there was most of the customers coming in going, where's the fruit and veg? It's harder than you think to get local fruit and veg where we are, and it's ridiculous because the Clyde Valley was famous for producing lots of veg, but most of those producers have all gone now, and it's actually quite difficult to get fruit and veg. So what we now do is one poor soul, being me, gets up a few mornings a week and goes up to the Glasgow Fruit Market. So that's a pretty early start. We arrive there at 4 o'clock in the morning. Wherever possible, we try and buy Scottish in, but certainly English, it has to be British. So, you know, there's no bananas on display, as you can see, because we don't grow bananas in this country. But what we're trying to do is get sort of stick to as authentic. And also, as well as that, I'm very determined that we're going to be seasonal. So strawberries are finished now, so there won't be strawberries in here. I don't agree with the whole thing. We also need to keep a little bit of traditional aspect to the business. And I have a real thing about, you know, strawberries on Christmas Day that have come from South Africa. Do we really need them?
So there's also, there's condiments, there's juice, and there are like sort of muesli, breakfast items, jams, marmalades, and fresh coffee. So it's a one-stop shop.
One of the things we've done since we moved across the new premises, we've actually, as we're recording this, have had to make the joiner stop. He was making too much noise. What we're planning to develop with, there's definitely demand. We're in a pretty amazing setting. The scenery is pretty awesome around us. And we're planning to do hot filled rolls using our own products. We put in a fairly expensive big coffee machine. So it's planning to do more takeaways. Anything we're trying to do, we're trying to add to the enjoyment of our meat. That's really the primary sort of thing that we're trying to do here. This is our kale over here, where we grow kale and rape and swedes, and that's what the cattle eat in the winter time. So it's like they just get fresh green food, all those bales over there and that lines. So we were one of the first people to start doing what we do with our cattle. We rotationally graze our cattle, so all our cattle move every single day of the week, every single day of the year. They move to a fresh area of grass, and what we're trying to do is maximize the production from the grass. But it also then makes it's good for the animals, but it's also really good for the land as well, because the cattle are moving all the time, they're not standing in one spot. So in the winter time we're not getting poaching, and then in the summer time they're moving across, and the insects and the livestock and all the things that go with cattle, and they're moving across the fields. So we'll finish just we'll finish about 150 to 200 a year just off grass alone, and then we're running at our peak during the summertime. We'll have about 250 cattle in the place. So we will. There would be more, but they cost an awful lot of money.
Michael, that is not a Scottish accent, so whereabouts are you from?
So originally from County Down in Northern Ireland. I had a previous career in the seed industry, travelled all across the world with the seed industry, but an opportunity came up in Scotland, and as a young lad of 18, I thought that would be a good career move, and I would move across here for a couple of years and then go back to Northern Ireland. And that was 34 years ago. So, well and truly. And now I would count this. I will always be an Irishman to the day I die. But my children are all been born and bred here. My wife's from here. And I've now lived here twice as long as I ever lived in Northern Ireland.
So your business is part of Lanarkshire Larder. So can you tell us a bit about why you wanted to be involved in that?
Well, basically anything that can promote Lanarkshire. You know, when I first came here, I lived in Edinburgh for many years, and this farm came up for sale. It was in Lanarkshire. And my perception of Lanarkshire after having lived in Edinburgh was steelworks, Ravenscraig, heavy industry, all that sort of thing. I never really thought of Lanarkshire for the beautiful county that it is. It's absolutely stunning. Like, I took my staff out this morning at 8 o'clock out of the front door of our shop and made them stand and look around and just, you know, just
enjoy the beautiful area we live in. It's a stunning setting. And anything that promotes this area, because we're not seen necessarily, I wouldn't have said Lanarkshire was seen as a larder of Scotland, whereas it is. If you take the Clyde Valley, famous for fruit and veg for many, many years, that's an industry that's gone. The Clyde Valley was famous for apples, numerous orchards, they've tried to rekindle that. So anything that generates, basically that promotes this area, anything that's good to bring more people into this area, so they get to enjoy what we get to enjoy every day. Like I keep saying to my kids, you know, someday you're going to be sitting in a city somewhere looking out at a concrete wall. Enjoy, think back to the area that you live in. I once had a discussion with a guy out of the council who was telling me that you should promote more, Michael, on Facebook. Just take pictures around the farm and all the rest. I'm saying, but Billy, it's so boring. Just what if you know, he says, boring. He says, I'm sitting in an office looking at 20 other folk all day. He says, and your wee picture pops up of Tinto Hill or something where we are. Just a beautiful location. It brightens my day up.
It's funny because we're sitting in your office and it's got windows on all sides apart from one, and it's lovely looking out at the trees. And I've just said before we started, it's much nicer than my office because I'm looking at the wall of the building that I live in.
Well, to be fair, actually, our house, we built this house, so we did, and it is all windows. There's windows everywhere in the windows, and we lived on the farm. There was no house when we bought the farm. And I lived on the farm for a couple of years before I decided the location of where I would put the house, tried to put the house. And it's all windows, but a lot of that is down to having lived for about 9 years in a basement flat in Edinburgh with no sunlight that nearly killed me. So I want windows. And as well as that, I want to enjoy the views. I grew up in County Down in Northern Ireland, and our view was the mountains of Mourne, where the mountains of Mourne sweep down to the sea. Now I wanted to enjoy the area that we live in.
So you talked a bit about the meat that you have not been fed any seed, basically. What was the decision for that? Does it stem from your old job, or like what made you want to?
In my previous life in the seed industry, I was sent to New Zealand to have a look at different systems. And one of the main things we went to look at was look at low-cost systems. And I saw things happening in New Zealand, things that I had never understood as a farmer could happen. So that we could get really high daily live weight gains, we could grow our cattle just using grass, just by the correct management. You know, I'd spent my life in an industry where all I was trying to do was produce more grass, but never actually thought of, well, what does the farmer do with the grass once he's grown it? How's it managed? And we were, quite frankly, making a complete mess of that in the UK, in both islands, both Ireland and the UK. And so we've changed all that. And it was basically just to try and be a more efficient business. Originally, it was to reduce costs. Then you get the added benefits of the health benefits of it, because they've now proven that the higher in omega, it's not as high as oily fish, but it is higher than conventionally reared beef. That's the key factor. The omega-3 thing is a big thing. And if there's anything that can help both reduce our reliance on cereals and imported products, imported soya, etc., coming from halfway across the world. If there's anything that can do that, we can produce more, better quality, higher, with a better health tick box for both the animal and for the person that's actually using it, then I think it's a win-win.
So one of the newer parts of Lanarkshire Larder is the trail, so people can obviously follow it and stop off at different places. What is your experience of that so far?
I'm a big believer in the trail. The trail would be a really good idea. There is no doubt that people do come out. We get customers come out from Edinburgh and Glasgow, come out as far to shop with us. And if we can bring more people into the area and give them more choice in the area, so they don't have to come to me every week, but they might come to Erringston Cheese or come to some of the other people on the trail. But hopefully, they'll also, some week, they'll come to Erringston Cheese, and then the next week, they'll think, well, I'll go to Damn Delicious. So there's lots of different opportunities. And if people know that there's lots of choice, because people, and I'll be honest with you, until I joined Lanarkshire Larder, a lot of the producers, I didn't know they existed. You know, we met up, we talked to each other, and there's a little group. And I didn't know they existed. And there's an awful lot of choice and an awful lot of really good producers within Lanarkshire that I didn't know about, that when I know about. So if the trail is educating people that they can come out into Lanarkshire, have a lovely day, experience lots of different things, eat in lots of beautiful places, pick up some lovely food for going back home for the rest of the weekend or the rest of the week, then it's all good.
I take it your business is called Damn Delicious because everything's damn delicious.
The name Damn Delicious, I don't know. Like, you know, I sometimes wonder whether it was a good idea or a bad idea. My mother was disgusted. She was always disgusted that we used damn in the title of our business. But what I was really trying to do was emphasise that whether it's a piece of beef, whether it's a piece of lamb, whether it's one of our amazing Christmas turkeys, the experience that you would get is I want you to lean back from the plate and go, that was damn delicious.
Well, thank you very much. I'll need to pick up one of your pies and have one tonight and say that was damn delicious.
I am quite confident that you would.
Thank you. As it happens, I did try Michael's steak pie for my tea that night, and I'm happy to confirm it was indeed damn delicious. We left Michael and headed for Strathaven, where I sat down with Theo, owner of Cafe Roasted, whose enthusiasm for doing things a particular way has presented him with great opportunities, but also some unforeseen challenges. I'm now in Roasted Coffee Shop in Strathaven with owner Theo. Hi Theo, how are you?
Not too bad, how are you?
Good, thanks, yeah. So we are touring about Lanarkshire, speaking to different people on the Lanarkshire Larder Trail. So could you just tell me a little bit about your involvement with Lanarkshire Larder to start off with?
I was approached by Lanarkshire Larder, sold this story of promoting and using and just opening up all the lovely producers that we have on Lanarkshire Larder. It is basically just a group of like-minded people that are all producing in and around South Lanarkshire, which I think is great because it promotes us as individuals and then puts us on the map effectively, and I kind of like it.
So we're sitting here in your shop and obviously no one can see us because it's audio. So could you just tell us a little bit about what's on the menu and kind of the ethos behind what it is you do?
So Roasted started 4 years ago. I had a contract terminated a month before Christmas and I was like, that's it. I'm not going to work for the man anymore. I'm going to find something to do myself. And I've been looking for I've been here now, this Christmas will be 20 years. So from day one, I was always looking at doing a business. But in hindsight, I think if I'd got one 20 years ago or 15 years ago, I don't think Strathaven would have been ready for what I had in my head. But anyway, 4 years ago, I wanted to do a restaurant. So I was all geared up to do a restaurant, and something snapped in my head. I said, why restaurant? Why work every night? Why do, let's do a coffee shop and do, like, finish at 4 or 5 and what have you. And that's how that sort of came about. I thought I'd bring coffee, or decent coffee, to town. Put a lot of emphasis and effort into sourcing good quality suppliers for milk and my coffee and bits and bobs. And it all started from there. There is coffee shops in Strathaven, and I got in trouble for saying, well, and what are you going to do? Make coffee. But we make coffee. No, I'm going to make proper coffee. So that upset a lot of people in the beginning. But
do you feel now though everyone's up their coffee game, or are you?
No, not at all. And I don't understand that. It's like it doesn't compute. I knew what I wanted to, who was going to supply my coffee. I knew who was going to supply the milk. I knew that I wanted to make my own bread, so I'd sourced a Scottish flour producer. And even when I placed my first order, my phone rang and it was Angus from Mungo's Wells, and he goes, don't mean to pry, but you've ordered so many bags of flour. You said you were a coffee shop. Yeah, but I intend on doing this, and this. Okay. So it was just, that was one of the pre-conversations. But no, everybody else in Strathaven's had the opportunity over the last 4 years to source better milk or to source different coffee, and they've just stuck. We're blessed. There's a new coffee roaster in town. He's up at the industrial estate. Because I've got everybody hooked on the coffee that I'm using at the moment, it's really hard to break away from that. And every day you have so many people come in and go, coffee's amazing, and it kills me. But because I've got a second grinder, I'm going to feature Fowl Coffee as a guest in the next couple of weeks, just to sort of show the love. But it's a tricky one because you've got everybody hooked on this coffee from Glasgow, and I can't. It's not that I'm afraid. I've tried putting different coffees on, and people like them, people hate them. This one is consistent, and it's just, I don't know, it just works.
Is it Deer Green by any chance?
No, it's actually the Good Coffee Cartel.
Oh, nice. Oh, in fact, we should have seen, there's a little tin over there, so yeah. So yeah, actually speaking of that, you've got like some bits and pieces for sale as well, and you've got food, so you've got toasties and sandwiches, and is that all the bread you make?
Yeah, so all the toasties and the sandwiches feature on the sourdough that I make. The brioche rolls are for the bacon rolls. When we started to do the bacon roll, we used Robinson's bacon from down in Ayrshire, make my own brioche rolls, and we were arguing. I was like, right, what are we going to do? Do we make a chutney? So that was an easy no-brainer. So we make our own chutney, and then it came down to the long debate. How many bits of bacon do you put on a bacon roll? Do you put two or do you put three? Is three excessive? Two's not enough. So we put three bits of bacon on there. It's smoked bacon. Everybody that has a bacon roll, for all the carnivores out there, just, they go, wow. The way I look at it, if you're going to do something, do it right and do it properly. Don't cut corners. Hence the three bits of bacon, not two.
And so you've mentioned a few suppliers there. So is it sort of Scottish, kind of localish people that you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mosgiel's 20 miles down the road. The flour, they come from East Lothian. Good Coffee Cartel, obviously Scotland doesn't grow coffee, so we're at the mercy of the other regions. But they've got ties and buy directly from the producers and stuff like that. So they're cutting out the middleman effectively, and the producers getting the money, as opposed to getting bought by a massive cooperative and then the producers getting left out. So in that respect, yeah, it's paying attention to where your ingredients come from and making sure that the person that's supplying it is getting looked after.
And if this is the second time I've said this today, that's not a Scottish accent, so whereabouts are you from?
No. So I was born in Australia to Greek parents. When I was working in Sydney, I met a Scottish chick, really liked her, but she had a chef who was a boyfriend. After 6 weeks, they went their separate ways, and I was there, picked up the pieces, and the rest of it was history. But when it came to her leaving, I was like, do I say goodbye at the airport, or do I follow her? So I sold everything and moved here on the 28th of December, 2002. So this year will be 20 years.
Wow. And that's not a great time, because you'll be used to hot winters, but that's your summer.
I keep mentioning this and people go, what? So one Aussie dollar was buying 33p at the time. I came here and then I'd left a job that was paying me 45 grand a year over there to work here for like 13k or 15k. It was like ludicrous. So I've built a lot of resilience and perseverance, but Scotland's home now. This is where my house is. I've got three kids, so.
Coffee culture in Australia has always been...
Oh, huge.
So even when you were there, was it like this now?
Well, so when I left in 2002, it was established. When I first came here, it was rubbish coffee. It was Costa, speciality coffee wasn't a thing here. And in Australia, we don't use the word speciality, we just use coffee. You've got good coffee and rubbish coffee. But even in the town that I grew up in, like 38,000 people, 3 hours away from Sydney, when I went back in 2009, they had a coffee roaster. Their coffee game had stepped up as well.
Yeah, because it's funny to think now, given how good coffee is and all the different coffee shops, specifically if you're in a city, what it was like before. But yeah, it just wasn't a thing. Like
no, it wasn't. If you look at a lot of the speciality coffee shops in Glasgow in particular, we all sort of started around about the same time. 2018 seemed to be the magic year for quite a few places, because I know when I opened up on July the 2nd, the week after, my friend Gillian opened up Maze in Finiston.
Oh, yeah.
And now she's got one in Denniston as well. But it's like one of those things. It was like there was speciality coffee, but it wasn't accessible. Mm. And here in Strabane, they had really good, Taylor's around the corner did really good beans. And that was the place that if you wanted a cup of coffee, you went. And then I, like a genius, came along and now provide this a second place where you could come along and have a cup of coffee.
So I can see up there near your coffee machine there's suspended coffee, so can you tell me a bit about that?
Suspended coffee was introduced in America, and basically you would walk in and suspend the coffee. So if you'd order a flat white but order a second one, and what it would mean then, you'd walk away with one, the second one was paid for, so during the course of the day a less fortunate person than you could come along and buy one. So a customer had recommended or suggested we do this, so we started it. But what actually happened, there is areas of deprivation in Strabane and people that are in need, because we've got a food bank now. Although you've got 500,000, 600,000 pound houses and everybody's got two cars, normally two Range Rovers or Teslas, they don't talk about poverty in Strabane. It's shushed away like with a big shh. But it is present, but people have this thing about going into a place like this. So what I end up doing, I collect them. Once I get up to a certain figure, I then give it to various charities. I've donated to the Gotland Homeless Project was the last one that I donated. I'd rather give it to people that can use the money as opposed to sort of sit there and think. And then what I normally do is if I've got 100 coffees and I've given it a value of £2.50, so that's 250 quid, I normally double that myself and then give that to less fortunate people.
So you seem to have an interest in sort of sustainable, ethical and local focus. So can you just tell us a bit about that?
I also lectured in one of my former lives. And when I was lecturing, I was trying to introduce the sustainable journey. I was trying to introduce a compost. I was trying to introduce compostable cutlery. But the powers to be were against it. They thought that that point, £25,000 on a composting unit was too much money or what have you. So this was back in 2012, 13 and 14, I was trying to enforce this and make it common practice that everybody in the canteen had to use compostable cutlery, cups and all the rest, as opposed to the styrofoam boxes and bits and pieces. So this was like 8 years ago, but I was too much of a visionary back then. So when I was working at UWS and they were all doing it, I thought that from day one, that's what I was going to do. So from day one, when you come here, all the cups are compostable, the cutlery is compostable, the napkins compostable, brown paper bags, everything was compostable. And the reason I did that was I thought we need to start respecting the world that we live in. And by making these little changes and being like a little guy, the next big thing that I sort of did was a living wage employer. And because, again, small business, why can't you look up after your stuff? But from day one, the focus has been on where does that ingredient come from. So for me, and I'll just name two suppliers, Macduff Beef, I get my brisket and my shin from, and McLean's Gin, because of him and his cherry bakewell gin. I've got this tart that I do, it's a cherry bakewell, and I haven't had it on for 3 weeks because there's a supply issue at the moment. He hasn't got the bottles and I can't get the gin, and everybody keeps on saying, when are you going to get the cherry bakewell tart back on? I'm like, leave me alone. But everybody loves it. They go crazy for it.
Are they on Lanarkshire Larder?
Believe it or not, they are. It's funny because there's a lot of people that I've been using before Lanarkshire Larder evolved and just sort of happened that, oh, hang on a second, these guys are.
I asked Theo about the challenges his business is facing in the current economic climate.
Costs are going up every week and it's becoming so fickle. Like really fickle, because you can't just keep putting your prices up the minute something goes up. And one of my suppliers actually has a disclaimer on their invoices: prices will be going up and there's nothing you can do about it, and end of. And I'm like, I wish I could do the same thing.
And this is all the energy crisis, or is it kind of everything?
No, it all started with Brexit was the first sort of the ripple effect, but it all started with the Ukraine war, because apparently flour comes from the Ukraine. But I use East Lothian flour. It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. And I think a lot of people just jump on the bandwagon. I remember when I was working in Glasgow back in 2005, we had bacon prices went through the roof. And I said to my milkman, I said, why is bacon going through the roof? Chinese. I said, what's the Chinese got to do with bacon? Oh, they want to live a Western lifestyle. So they started buying up all the bacon. They started buying up all the milk. So you saw bacon and milk just go. And I was like, yeah, I didn't believe it, but it just seems that media will say one thing and then everybody just jumps on the bandwagon. And this is on the back of coronavirus, we won't mention the war.
Yeah, I know, it has been like a perfect storm of everything possibly going wrong.
If it can go wrong, it will go wrong.
What are anything exciting coming up?
So the plans were always to maybe have a number two, but the problem with that is where does number two go and what would you do with number two and what would number two look like? Would it be a replication of this? Would it be... So it's not as straightforward as that. So at the moment, I'm focusing on keeping this one alive and making sure that we can get to the end goal. My friend messaged me yesterday, found this really cool horse box. We can turn it into a coffee cart for you. I'm like, that's great. But it's like, it needs $3,000 from me. I'm like, that's not great. So there's so many things that I would like to do. But ideally, if I had a coffee cart, then that would be amazing, because it means next year at the Balloon Festival, I could have a stand down there. At the moment, just tread water, keep supporting as many local suppliers as I can, and then keep providing uber cool food.
And hopefully getting your cherry bakewell cake back.
Well, hopefully. Fingers crossed. I've been told 3 weeks. Bottle issue.
So if someone was walking in the front door tomorrow and looked at your menu, what is the one thing that you would say you absolutely have to have this?
Oh, that's a tricky one. because we do a lot of cool things. But I would have to say it'd either be the brisket toasty for the meat eaters and the med if you're a vegan, because the whole thing from start to finish is plant-based and it's so tasty.
Well, thank you very much.
Not a problem, you're welcome.
Less than a 10-minute drive away was my next meeting with Robert of St Bride's Poultry. He took me to meet some of the lassies and the odd laddie being fattened up for Christmas.
He's a Norfolk bronze, and the reason that we take this breed is, well, twofold. They're a hardy kind of breed, and they're good for slow growing, which is what we do, so it's a natural kind of rearing process. These guys are now 2 months old, and by the time it comes to December, that'll be them 6 months old, as opposed to some supermarket breeds, which would maybe just live for 2 months. So the other thing is that they have great flavour, and we process them in a very traditional manner. So we hand pluck them, and then we hang them to dry age for 2 weeks normally. So that this really gives you the traditional type of farm fresh Christmas turkey.
I'm now at St Bride's Poultry with owner Robert. Hi Robert, how are you?
Hi Rosalind, I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. If anyone can hear sort of snoring in the background, it's not that anyone's fallen asleep, it's Lola the Labrador is having a bit of a nap. So Robert, can you just tell us a little bit about your business and how you go into what it is you do?
Yes, so we set up St Bride's Free Range Poultry in 2009, and it was actually on the back of the financial crash that we had another business which we lost. We had the property here in the outskirts of Strathaven, and we thought it'd be a good idea to get involved in poultry, especially as my background was in poultry and I'd been brought up on a poultry farm. My dad was a poultry farmer. The selection process for the poultry that we bring onto the farm is slow-growing breeds in a kind of natural process. It's low-input farming, it's small-scale farming, and it's sustainable farming. That's really the type of farming that we want to do. And these breeds that we select are the right breeds to let us do that type of farming. The turkeys that you saw earlier were hatched in July, and we'll keep them until we process them sort of beginning of December. So when we process them, we pluck them by hand, and then we dry age them for a minimum of 2 weeks. And what that does is it really gives you the best possible product at the end.
And as well as turkeys, you've got other poultry as well, so can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so it's the same selection process for chickens, which we have throughout the year, and ducks. So it's the same low input farming. The breeds are selected to be hardy breeds that will thrive in this type of environment.
What have you noticed that's changed? Obviously, you say you grew up on a poultry farm, so what was it like then versus now?
Well, originally, when my dad started farming, he would be doing a similar type of farming to what I'm doing now, but this is 50 years on. And at that time, poultry farming in particular was changing from kind of small-scale intensive farming to industrial farming, you would call it. So the birds were coming from outside and going inside, and they were getting produced in much bigger volumes. So we've kind of turned the clock back and gone back to the way that poultry farming used to be. In Scotland, there's only a handful of us doing this type of farming.
And do you sort of, have you noticed over the years as well that there's more consumer demand because there's a more of an understanding of that kind of farming?
Yes, I think so. I think that, you know, one of the problems with the UK food market is a price-sensitive market. At our end of the market, it's not a huge market. For instance, in the UK, only 5% of poultry is free range. So it means that 95% is intensively reared indoors. And the reason for that is to control the costs, really. So yes, I mean, it is changing, and people do want to understand where their food is coming from and how it's produced. And there is a greater awareness of that nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And whereabouts can we buy your poultry?
So you can buy direct from the farm. You just go onto our website and you can order on there. We also supply restaurants throughout the country, really, or give us a phone.
And how was that, obviously, with restaurants and things being closed during COVID? Did you have to sort of do more direct selling?
Yes, so pre-COVID, 95% of our business was with restaurants. And obviously, with the lockdown, that disappeared overnight. So we were kind of left with a few hundred, even more than that, a few hundred birds on the farm with no outlet for them. We started to sell to individual households, which actually in the first couple of months with COVID, with the lockdown, really took off in a big way. That kind of saw us through the really bad time of the initial lockdown. I have to say the restaurant business has not come back to the same level as it was pre-COVID, although we do have an increased demand on the household side.
So turkey's Christmas. What should people be looking for when they're buying their turkey?
So I think the first thing is that turkey tends to be the centrepiece of the whole Christmas lunch or Christmas dinner. So buy the best bird that you can afford, because there's a substantial difference between a free-range, traditionally produced bird than one you would buy in the supermarket. And I think if you've got that standard of bird, that kind of sets the whole Christmas lunch thing up. And the reason for that is that our birds are, they take so much longer to grow and mature. And you get the depth of flavour, but you also get a good fat covering, which means that they cook better and don't dry out the same as a faster produced bird.
So I wouldn't necessarily need to do the whole turkey in the bucket thing that I usually do.
Not with one of St. Bride's turkeys, you wouldn't have to do that, no.
And what is it that you do on Christmas Day?
We try to stay in bed on Christmas Day because we've had about a month of pretty much no sleep. But no, we do have the family round on Christmas Day. We do have a St. Bride's turkey. Although a couple of years we haven't had a St. Bride's turkey because we've sold them all and been short.
So yeah, turkey's a relatively new Christmas tradition for us, is that right?
Yes, it seems. I mean, I have great recollections of being a boy on the farm with my dad and caponising all the cockerels for the Christmas trade. So we would do that probably late summer, early autumn. In those days, the birds are chemically castrated, as opposed to in Europe, where they still physically castrate the cockerels. So I would think about 80% of all the Christmas birds sold at that time would be capons as opposed to turkeys. Now, it's absolutely the other way around now. You know, I think probably about 90% of all the poultry sold would be turkeys at Christmas, and a few capons and chickens and ducks.
And what is a capon like? Is it just like a big chicken? Like, what is it like in terms of chicken to turkey, if anyone's never tried it?
I think the thing is, if you eat a proper free-range, slow-grown turkey, then the flavour is going to be, it's a stronger flavour, a more gamey flavour than a mass-produced turkey. On the capon side, they're not going to be as strongly flavoured as the turkey. So, but they will be stronger flavoured than chicken, because the bird is older and the way it's fed. So somewhere in between a chicken and a turkey is the flavour of the capon.
So you're part of Lanarkshire Larder, and we've gone around different businesses to sort of discuss that with them as well as what they do. So what has it been like for you being part of the Lanarkshire Larder and the trail?
We're really in favour of setting up regional food groups. I think it's the way forward for the food industry. We were involved really from day one. I think if you go into Europe, especially France, then regional food really is a big deal in Europe. And it hasn't been in Scotland. And I think it's mainly because it's been under-resourced. You know, we haven't really put any resource into making this happen. But I think more strength to the regions. With Lanarkshire Larder, we've mainly been doing marketing. But I think on the back of the marketing, then we should be looking to have sales drives on the back of that, and creating more and more business for the members as we go along. All in favour of it. It's a really good thing, and I would like to see it driving forward.
Well, thank you very much. And I should probably say this, because there's turkeys, have a good Christmas when it comes.
Really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. My last stop of the day was Greenhill Cafe, where I met Andrew and Linda to talk about their unique business. So I'm now at Greenhill Cafe and Farm Shop, and I'm joined by owner Andrew. Hi Andrew, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Just finished a busy day here, so it's good to get a seat for a wee while.
For anyone that's never been, could you just tell us a bit about your business?
It's like a long story. We started, we had a, a dinner party years ago, and we had crocodile and kangaroo and Wagyu beef. And then it was just after that we thought that Wagyu beef was really nice, but I think we could produce it ourselves. So about 7 years ago, we bought our first breeding heifer, and then we just gradually grew the herd. We started selling from our garage, just selling it online, and then we basically expanded the shop twice now, added a cafe, which opened the September before the first lockdown. So we were just starting to build up steam, and then we had to obviously close and lock down again.
And for anyone that doesn't know, what is Wagyu beef?
Well, Wagyu is basically, it translates as Japanese cattle. It's a breed that comes from Japan. They buy it off at sort of top restaurants. And there's restaurants in London that sell it. It's very expensive. I think there's one that sells it at £1 a gram if you buy your steak. We're nothing like that. We're a lot cheaper. We generally produce, I wouldn't say Japanese Wagyu, we produce Scottish Wagyu, which is generally a Wagyu bull crossed with an Angus cow, which gets the best of kind of both worlds.
Andrew's wife Linda joined us to talk about the business.
We're almost 10 years into it now, so it does take a while. Obviously cattle are 9 months gestation, minimum 2 years fattening, so it's a slow process, but we're at the stage now where our herd numbers are up good enough, I think, for next year we should be processing a lot more regular.
Why did you have a dinner party with a crocodile and that? Is it just something that you did?
Because of him.
Well, we had been watching these sort of I'm a celebrity, get me out of here things, and we just fancied trying it. And then it was just after trying the Wagyu beef, which was superb that night, we just thought we would... It's a strange thing, I know, but we just started producing our own, and it saved a lot of money trying to buy it online. Producing ourselves was a lot cheaper. And Linda was always glad that we didn't like the crocodile, because she didn't fancy keeping crocodiles here.
Can you imagine? I wouldn't be here, I don't think. But no, that's how it started, and it's one of these things, it's just grown arms and legs. You know, initially we couriered the beef from what is now the shop, and then we get permission to open a small farm shop in 2016, which we did. And it just grew, and we got a good customer base. And then they started with, you needing a tea room or something like that as well. And hopefully it's going to be, when the last extension, we're going to make it bigger again. And then we self-supply both the shop and the cafe with the Wagyu, the sausages, the burgers, the steaks for the steak nights.
Which kind of answers my question, what can people expect from the cafe? A lot of Wagyu beef?
Not tons. We could incorporate a lot more. We've got a new chef just recently started, so ideally with his ideas, I mean, he'll be able to do a lot of chefy things with some of the different cuts.
For lunch, basically the Wagyu steak baguette that we do, because they get to try Wagyu beef, but it's not priced too expensive for them, so they can still come in and enjoy it. And generally people come in, they have the breakfast, or they'll have their own sausage, or own other. They like it that much. They go into the shop and they buy a packet of sausages or burgers on the way out, and they can enjoy them at home as well.
Do you find people are quite surprised at that, because it's seen as such a premium product that they probably don't think that they're going to get a Wagyu steak baguette, and then they're quite surprised?
I think because we cross with the Angus, which is quite a common way of doing it, you get a bigger animal, so you can bring the cost price down. We do full bloods as well, which is 100% Wagyu that you can basically trace their genetics back to Japan. That's a bit more expensive, but we're talking £30 a steak for the full blood, maybe 15 for the cross Wagyu. So it's within people's, well, at the moment, money's obviously getting tighter for a lot of people, so I don't know what the future will hold, but we've certainly kept it as reasonable as we possibly can.
And is Wagyu the one that was like, you know, getting massaged and all that, kind of all these stories about pampered cows?
Yes, what we've learned over the time is that's, yes, they do that in Japan, but it's more down to necessity rather than improving the quality of the beef. And what we found out about was, we had two sort of Japanese professors over to see our business, and they were explaining to us that a lot of the Wagyu over there are kept in small sheds, and because they're so confined that they would rub on the side of it, and they might get sores on the side of their skin, so they would rub oil into it just to stop any infections. And then it's that hot in the summer, the cattle would stop eating, so they would feed them the kind of byproducts from the brewery industry to help stimulate their appetite. Whereas in Scotland, we don't need to worry about things getting too hot, and we've got a big enough shed. So these are things that we don't need to do, and I personally don't think it would make much difference to the quality of the beef.
And for anyone coming in here for the first time, what's the one thing you'd say on the menu you have to have?
I think our all-day breakfast or a Wagyu burger would be the two things I would suggest. I think I wouldn't like to blow our own trumpet, but I think we do probably one of the best breakfasts around. Aye, folk certainly book in. They book in one Sunday, they'll come the next Sunday. They come.
Gluten-free breakfast, we're getting a good name for our gluten-free breakfast as well. We've spent a bit of time sourcing some of the ingredients for it. Obviously, they're not just as readily available, but I would say the ingredients list that we've got for it now, the products that we have, I think we'll stick with. I think everybody's happy with it.
And what do you sort of see for the future? Do you have any exciting plans coming up?
At the moment, we're looking at, we do have a decking area, which we added through lockdown. We're looking at either an awning or some kind of covering so that we can use that basically 365 days a year, hopefully. That gives us an extra 20 seats. Because hindsight's a great thing. When you build something and it becomes successful, you know, why didn't we do it bigger? Why didn't we do that? The one thing we didn't want to do was get too many seats that people are waiting too long to get served. We want people to come in, have their lunch, and they can go again. We don't want a big, you know, people sitting for hours and not getting served. And then obviously for Christmas, we're looking at Christmas party nights and progressing things that way. But that's basically what we're trying to do, is trying just to get a larger seating area.
And you mentioned Christmas there, C word. Do you guys find that people buy beef for Christmas, or is it a sort of a...
My Christmas order book is open already, and I've got roast and joints ordered already. So, yes, they do. They buy beef. We stock Kelly Brown's turkeys, our own beef, gammons. Well, steak pies, Wagyu steak pies are just unbelievable, the amount of them. Yeah, beef and steaks. A lot of people, you know, want to have steaks. I mean, folk like something different for their Christmas dinner as well.
I look after all the cattle and help in the kitchen. And my daughter Erin, she actually, we put a bakery on out the back as an extension, and she basically works in there and baking all the cakes for the cafe. So she's at college for a few months now, honing her skills and proving what she can do for the cafe. Yeah, it's certainly a good family-run business.
Can you tell us a bit about any recent success?
Going back to again to the cattle and the breeding, we had quite a nice wee proud moment earlier on this year. We sold two of Papa, our bull's offspring, two young bulls, fully DNA sampled, registered with the Australian Wagyu Breeders Association, had their certificates printed off, and in 3 days, a young farmer for five came down and took the two of them, and they were looking really good. Which is great because it puts us in a position to help somebody else that, in the same position that we were in, you know, nearly 10 years ago.
So does that mean there's going to be Wagyu beef in Fife? Because I'm from Fife, so I need to keep an eye out.
Yes, there will be. This young farmer in particular, I think it was a 300 teddy, Aberdeen Angus. These are two happy boys, you know, 300 girlfriends between them. So they have.
We did ask the young farmer, what's he going to do with the beef when he produces it? And he didn't actually have a plan at the moment, I think, because he's going to be 3 years anyway before he's got his first one there. And I said, what about a farm shop? He says, I'm not sure. So they might be trying to sell around restaurants. And I said, well, just be careful, because we tried to do that at the very start and it was taking 2 or 3 months for restaurants to pay you. And that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to expand the shop and the cafe, so that we could just sell our own beef direct to customers. And it was just to avoid the waiting to get paid.
With everything that's happened as well, I mean, direct to customers probably for the best now with everything going on, so.
Well, through lockdown, that's where we found that we were very good, because we could do vegetables, burgers, steaks, because obviously through lockdown, cattle don't stop growing. Cattle still need to be produced, and we did sort of meat packs, and we delivered them around the local area, and certainly a lot of people appreciated that, and it certainly helped us when we opened up again. People remembered that, and the cafe's been pretty much fully booked most days now.
So if I want to come for my breakfast at the weekend, I need to book?
We always recommend you book. We do take walk-ins, but if you want to be guaranteed to come in, sit down, enjoy your lunch, you're better to book a table. The one thing we didn't want to go to was one of these sort of buzzer systems and not take bookings that people just queue up. It was mainly through lockdown. We didn't want, when we opened up again, too many people sort of standing together, because we had to get rid of, I think, 4 or 5 tables to space them out in here. So we just had a strict booking system, and we've just continued that, and people seem to appreciate that. They can come in, sit down, and enjoy their food.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's clear to see Lanarkshire Larder is a welcome addition for the businesses who are part of it. It'll be really interesting to see how the group develops and supports its members in some extremely challenging times. Thanks to all the businesses I visited and chatted to for this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. Please remember to rate, review and give us 5 stars. Also, subscribe to Scran wherever you get your podcast so you never miss an episode. Scran is a Laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Rosalind Erskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.